Theory of narrative, continuity and contraction. The use of the metaphor as a form of narrative in the novel over the last 300 years has generated only occasional reflection on its elaborate means of representing and interpreting reality or the imagination. Storytelling in a novel can work with different effects, can build the value of compassion or invoke less ideal emotions, just as it is crucial that our perceptions recognize and adapt to new situations brought about by new scientific discoveries and new technological abilities. We also need to enable the recognition of portrayed elements of human life. In the context of certain literary works, moral solutions, or immoral ones, resolve social situations or dilemmas. In contrast, a literary work which actively portrays a panorama of life without taking sides in a moral dilemma generates a kind of landscape of reality. In the case in which a new narrative is developed, where a moral situation is not specific or not defined, this landscape then reveals inherent or intrinsic characteristics in the dimensions of the story, locale, or persons via the ongoing narrative itself. In other words, the picture tells the story. Considering human progress as a means of storytelling of the past 3,000 years, from the times of oral traditions being handed down from generation to generation, to the establishment of learning academies, to the copying of literary and illustrated manuscripts in medieval times, to the wide publication of books of literature with Gutenberg's printing technology, to the dissemination of electronic books, digitalized audio readings, and the online file downloading, we finally begin to understand the physical principles of media themselves and to appreciate their dynamics. Indeed, a wide discussion and analysis of these principles was presented by Marshall McLuhan in his groundbreaking book, Understanding Media, The Extensions of Man, published in 1964, which also predicted many of the social impacts of the computer and of miniaturization. Thus aware of the evolution and jumps of methods and technology, we then perceive the gap between linear perceptions of thinking enabled by literacy along the lines of logical linguistic categories of knowledge, and the nonlinear thought processes enabled by electronic technologies. This gap between linear and post-linear media can easily widen, eventually causing a breach in the historical continuity between these two basic steps in human evolution. It is the very communication between suggestive periods of technological development in which we have the continuity of history itself, in the arts and literature and poetry, and in the historical phases of music, architecture, style, and fashion. Over the bridge between linear and nonlinear phases of history in the 20th century, there have already been nonlinear attempts to describe various social panorama and interior personal experiences, but few critical or academic explanations of these literary works have done much to make them more accessible or comprehensible, or to provide an outline of their importance in building this bridge between successive histories. Only a few significant works of literary theory have attempted to understand the terms of the narrative. George Lukács' Theory of the Novel, 1915, is one of them. E.M. Forster's 1927, Aspects of the Novel, and Yale University's Eric Auerbach's 1953 Mimesis, Representation of Reality in Western Literature. In psychological terms, any development of a literary form which pushes further open the thematic limits of the human imagination, must be understood as a structural shift in concrete reality. This kind of development should therefore be considered as barometric or seismographic tool which aids in the estimation of the dimensions of psychological and psychic reality, quote unquote. Just as extreme new forms of comedy and satire can seem to stretch the limits of conventional sanity, sometimes being whimsically perceived as insane, so too in prose writing must new themes and novel modes of human thought be also taken into account as reasonably sane. In the study of 20th century literature, it is already understood that several novels, such as James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake and Italo Calvino's Invisible Cities, have already moved narrative beyond the limits of coherent understanding. This literary observation has just begun to make understandable this structural shift from the descriptions of concrete reality into the frontiers of incomprehension. As a valid state of the logical mind, we shall explore aspects in the incomprehensible, impersonal, perception, perspective, and the communication in the development of post-Aristotelian and post-medieval philosophy from Descartes' neo-rationalist methodology, incorporating innate ideas, to John Locke's emphasis on sense perception, reflective experience, and the phenomena of mind, the mathematician Leibniz's physics from Plato, the phenomena of mind. David Hume developed an empiricism, that is, a supremacy of the perception. Immanuel Kant reconstructed the categories of knowledge and the logical criteria of the critical faculties into a list. Hegel qualified aesthetics in art as one of the main operations of dialectics, that is, a critical process to understand and appreciate truth and beauty and the synthesis of opposites. In the 20th century, Husserl developed a system of scrupulous introspection called phenomenology, which analyzes the experience of external events upon the individual's conscious mind and their comparative essential meanings upon different people. Again, Husserl developed a system of scrupulous introspection called phenomenology, which analyzes the experience of external events upon the individual's conscious mind and their comparative essential meanings upon different people. To understand fiction, E.M. Forster, in his Aspects of the Novel, makes the distinctions between the kinds of narration used to produce the storyline. In one approach, Forster observes how the author creates a deliberate arrangement of events which advances not only the narrator's voice, but his mindset and personal agenda. In this scenario, when the author is detected to speak through the words or actions of his main character, the role and degree of subtlety of that character then become a significant factor, which will distinguish that the novel is either an expression of philosophy or of propaganda. So, an expression of philosophy or an expression of propaganda. In the second type of approach, the narrator takes the neutral editorial perspective in order to objectively describe the lay of the landscape, setting or place, and the proceedings of the action. In this type of approach, I would add that whether intentional or not, the layout of sequences of events and the handling of the gaps of time from one scene to the next actually then constitutes an outline of the partitioned time periods of the story. In modern scientific terms, this therefore indicates the author's existential understanding of space-time itself. And I would add, in terms of space-time world lines, which are the lines of time elapses from one position in sidereal position to another sidereal position. They're lines which move in spirals. One example of the distinctions that Forster gives is a comparison of the novels of Tolstoy and Dostoevsky. In many of Tolstoy's works, one or several of characters set a moral example of behavior, a Kantian categorical imperative, in fact, whereas each character in a Dostoevsky novel represents a complex of multiple motives and frequently self-contradictory behaviors. A natural difficulty in the understanding of academic science is, of course, the degree of complexity involved in opening and operating measuring instruments, and in the properties and the interactive behavior of the properties themselves. The scientific parallel of the reader's ability or inability to follow the nonlinear visual and verbal patterns of such novels is the inadequate public understanding of 19th century quantum theory. This general difficulty in fathoming the behavior and functions of subatomic particles has given rise to the concept of a counterintuitive theory, wherein we think certain functions of matter to be beyond or contrary to our intuitive reference points. Perhaps this is because the development of rationalism in the realm of logic and the intellect occurred during the same historical phase as the early discoveries of atomic structure. The principle of atomic weight was well apparent in the 19th century in the easily identifiable differing weights of mineral and metallic elements according to their varying displacement of water by objects of identical size, but because of different densities of the stones themselves. In the mid-19th century, experimental science had reached a period of logical stasis, and there was a period of hostility between many scientists and philosophers over their apparently separate paths of development in the use of reason. The atomic principle was defined as an indivisible particle, according to the consistent physics of Democritus, Aristotle, and Newton. A turning point in the expected results of logical experiments did occur in a single mundane experiment being performed by Max Planck. With the superheating of an iron ball, the measured decline of its temperature back down somehow revealed unexpected and inexplicable pikes of thermal energy on the graph being released in the cooling process. These are spikes in the cooling process measurement. Max Planck's radical inductive synthetic synectic analysis then shifted to a new principle of atomic number, described by the quantum theory, which explained these spikes as bursts of layers of multiple atomic shells. Bursts of layers. After more than 2,200 years, the atom can no longer be considered indivisible. By the beginning of the 20th century, new forms of logic provided by a struggling reconciliation of science and philosophy, and by new powers of microscopic instruments, could be used to recognize the existence and behavior of viruses and subatomic particles. But these discoveries were not fully synthesized into stable learning tools in their contemporary systems of public education. Indeed, even at the highest levels of scientific debate, Medical observations of biology and mathematical findings of atomic theory were not allowed to academic acceptance when they yet conflicted with Aristotelian categories of knowledge, and that they could not be actually seen by contemporary state-of-the-art microscopes or telescopes. In July 1945, after 50 years of severe tribulations, the theory of atomic structure, still unverified by visual technology, did lead indisputably to an effective method to release an atomic explosion. The atomic nucleus still had not been visually seen.